Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith taking shape at Central UMC in Sacramento, California.
The podcasts currently feature the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
Thanks for listening. God has taken God's place in the divine council. In the midst of the gods, God holds judgment. How long will you judge unjustly and show partiality to the wicked? Give justice to the weak and the orphan. Maintain the right of the lowly and the destitute. Rescue the weak and the needy and deliver them from the hand of the wicked. They have neither knowledge nor understanding. They walk around in darkness. All the foundations of the earth are shaken. I say, you are gods, children of the Most High, all of you. Nevertheless, you shall die like mortals and fall like any prince. Rise up, O God, and judge the earth, for all the nations belong to you.
Wade in the water, wade in the water, children, wade in the water. God's gonna trouble the water.
Sarah and I purchased our house in East Sacramento about 3 years ago, and it took a number of months to actually find a house. And as soon as we put an offer in on the house, we quickly went into a moment of panic because the offer was accepted, and it was the only house that we'd looked at in about 4 months that had a pool in the backyard. And the panic was that Eleanor was on the way, and oh no, this home has water in the back, and that's not wise. Any pediatrician or family physician or nurse would let you know that all kinds of dangers come with having a pool. And so we went into kind of that low-level anxiety as parents, knowing that we had a pool in our backyard with a young child. And so that anxiety developed as she started to walk, and it led us to put a fence around the pool, which cost a lot. And now it's a similar anxiety because instead of her learning to walk, now we're trying to slow her down, walking feet, walking feet, walking feet by the pool. And the water just comes with that kind of danger. And I'll confess, we didn't have a precise plan of how we were going to teach her how to swim. I think our basic goal, we weren't conscious of it, but our basic goal was we want her to love the water. We want her to love being in it. And maybe because of that goal, or maybe in spite of us, she's learned to love the water. She loves to be in it. And she's used a flotation device, a vest, and then floaties. And you as a parent start to breathe a lot easier as soon as your child consistently puts that on to go in the backyard, because it means you can actually be in the backyard without the fear of the water in that place. So about a week ago or so, I guess 2 weeks ago, Harrison came to give Eleanor her first official swim lesson. And I love Harrison, but I did not love it when his first words to me were, "You have to get rid of the floaties." Because I liked the floaties. I could be in the back and she could kind of move freely, kind of, enough so that I knew she wasn't going to sink. So they seemed like a really good idea to me, but Harrison helped us to see that she was going to have to unlearn a lot of things because the flotation device has given her a false sense of security. And then also it's taught her to swim kind of like this. And it turns out that you don't go to the Olympics swimming like that. And so she was going to need to feel more confident and more comfortable. And to do that, she was going to have to unlearn some of the ways that we had unconsciously taught her to be. And this morning, we're reflecting on what people of faith, followers of Jesus, might learn from swimming lessons as we seek to grow. And I think that's a first thing that we could learn. How many of us come from traditions that have taught us certain ways to follow Jesus? And we're going to have to unlearn some of that if we're going to be open to how God is moving, how grace is coming among us at this particular moment. Some of us have developed some spiritual bad habits that we're going to need to unlearn if we're going to root our lives in grace and grow in faith. And so I want to invite us to start right there. What in your own life might you need to unlearn if you're to be rooted in grace, if you're to grow in faith? See, people of faith throughout generations, I think you could say for all of time, have gone down routes and gotten into bad habits and needed to be reminded of things that we should unlearn if we're going to follow in the way of God. And that's where our psalm is this morning. It uses language that most of us aren't too familiar with, but it starts with God arriving at a council of gods. And so God arrives among this council of gods, and God, I imagine, stands quite triumphantly and lets them know, just like Harrison did with me, the floaties, you can't do that anymore. It's not working, okay? And this is the way that the psalmist records it, that God arrives and says, you have ruled unjustly. You have not recognized the needs of the weakest, the orphans and the widows. And isn't that tendency timeless? Every community failing to recognize the weakest among us, the most oppressed. And the truth is that God longs for us to know that none of us are going to swim free in the world until all of us can swim. And so God needs us to unlearn some bad habits, to put the doggy paddling aside, and to allow ourselves to support others all, and all means all. If Jesus taught us anything, it's just that. That God's unconditional love is here for all, and Jesus wanted to make sure that everyone could swim. And I think that's where the psalm was heading this morning. And sometimes we have to be told to take those things off if we're going to swim freely. There's an organization in New York City. This is a video from a group of young people that do news in the Bronx. And so they're going to share a little bit of their story about teaching everybody to swim. And I invite you to listen and watch.
When it's hot and you want to cool off, many New Yorkers head to the beach. And for Bronx residents, Orchard Beach is a spot to beat the heat. However, not all of us that jump into the water know how to swim.
It's important for young people to learn how to swim because, like, if you want to go to the beach or something and the waves carry out to the deep part of the end and you don't know how to swim, a lot of people drown.
This summer alone, there have been 14 deaths in the metro area due to red tide currents that form in the water and force unsuspecting and usually unprepared beachgoers under. To prevent any deaths in the future, a not-for-profit called the Swim Strong Foundation was out in Rockaway Beach, launching a new campaign that will also aid people in the Bronx.
The biggest thing about the campaign is literally just teaching children how to swim, and we've been helping a lot of children become more aware of their surroundings, of the riptides, of their safety.
Sean Slevin, the executive director of the foundation, says that without the right training, it is easy for a person to drown from a riptide.
Most people get surprised, naturally enough. They get caught with the riptide, they're taken away, and then they panic, and then they struggle, and then they think, oh, I'm going to have to swim to shore. So they start to try to swim to shore, and that's the worst thing to do. What you really need to do is turn over onto your back and float and just relax in the water. And you'll actually feel the tide will stop. It will break, and then you can turn back over and start to swim towards shore.
Slevin says that communities like those in the Bronx are in need of these tips the most.
You may not be aware of this, but the African American community actually has the highest death by drowning rates. It's off the charts. It's actually 3.2% higher in the African American community than in the Caucasian community.
Hopefully, this impacts all the beaches in the Metro New York. because it doesn't matter where you go, people are going to reach the beaches regardless of where they are, where if there is a beach near them, people will go.
And parents with children who are part of the Swim Strong Foundation love seeing how far they've come.
My son, Eric, he started swimming. He's now in 10th grade at Bronx High School of Science. When Sean started the boys' swim team at St. Sebastian, she taught him all the fundamentals and kept pushing him to do better, and he succeeded. And I feel safe because when he goes to the beach, I don't have to worry. You know, I feel very safe.
And this foundation wants to give more parents the ability to say just that. Reporting for BronxNet, I'm Verilyn Williams.
I want to share for a moment a couple of the lessons that I've learned this summer in trying to accompany Eleanor as she learns how to swim. And the first is awareness of noticing our breathing. It seems so obvious, right? But when your child is learning how to swim, that's the place you begin. We breathe with our heads at the surface, and then we hold our breath as our head goes below. And it takes games to teach Eleanor how to begin this process. So we'd use games to get her to put her chin down. And soon I hope these games will help us get our nose under the water. And then eventually our whole head under the water, and we practice it over and over and over. And that process develops a sense of trust. So we reassure her that we're there for her, doing it with her, accompanying her in that process, and we verbally say that over and over and over. And then one of the things that Harrison taught me is to differentiate play and practice, and we need both in our lives. I tend to be one that moves easier towards practice, and play is more challenging for me, and I know some of you in the room are type A like that, and some have no idea what I'm talking about. But we need time for both. And next week, worship is going to be centered around vacationing, play, Sabbath, and we're going to dwell in the depths of what that might teach us. But we need both of these. So the practice time for Eleanor is learning to move her arms, and the way she does it is high to the fishies, high to the birdies. So practice can actually be fun too. High to the birdies, high to the fishies. You got to keep your legs going at the same time. And then as soon as you remember that, you've forgotten the other thing. And then you have to use your arms again. And think of the patience that it takes as a swim instructor to be with those children. Think of the patience that it takes to accompany somebody who's trying to grow in faith. One of our current goals is for Eleanor to put her entire head under the water and feel confident that her body is upright and she's going to be okay when she comes up to breathe. And so what I wonder is, what is your goal right now for your own faith journey? What is your goal for yourself, for your family? One of the key things that I've learned in this process is that I can't do it by myself. I tried that, and I was teaching a kind of ridiculous-looking dog paddle that wasn't getting Eleanor to actually float, much less swim. And my guess is that's true for some of us when we try to practice our faith by ourselves as well. And so we have things here like Blueprint for Discipleship, which is a 6-week series that helps people connect in to a small group to learn to practice telling your own faith story together. And then once you've done that, we invite you to think that swimming is not something that you just pick back up and you jump back into the water. You're going to have to practice it. And so we do that every week in kitchen tables where we watch over each other in love. Because it takes time to unlearn some of the bad habits, bad practices that we have developed as people of faith so that we can be free in the water. And I want to invite you to consider this image of baptism for a moment. We receive messages all the time. Some of our children, not all, Sacramento School hasn't gone back yet, but some of our kids have gone back to school. This is true for children and children of every age. We receive messages about who we are from friends, from people who don't know us, from expectations that society puts on us that we're to look like this. So many of us in this room have been burned by those experiences. Those messages come to us all the time. They bombard us. Sometimes it feels like we're drowning in messages of who we're supposed to be. excuse me. Baptism is a moment in our lives when we ritually mark that God's message for who we are is the message for who we are. We're a beloved child of God. Christ is who we claim to follow in the midst of that. It's like the ultimate of swimming coaches, teaching us how to go out into the deeps, as that young man in the Bronx talked about. A Christian then is one who puts on Christ. And we as a community come around that person, that child, or that adult as they do that through the sacrament of baptism. This November, we'll do just that as we baptize children and teenagers and adults in this space. And I'd invite some of you to consider, if you haven't been baptized, to fill out that card and turn it in during the offering, and then learn with us over the next few weeks about what that might mean in your life as we move forward together. Baptism at the table these last 3 years has looked something like this, and it's beautiful and powerful, but we tend, like a lot of mainline churches, to sprinkle water on the person who's being baptized. In Jesus' time, baptism looked very different. Frighteningly different, I would say. Think of a river, and then a person being immersed under the water. Their head held under the water, and then brought out. Think of the kind of freedom that you experience from the panic and the fear of having your head held underwater and then being brought from those troubled waters into breath. That's what we mark with the sacrament of baptism, is that God is with us in those troubled waters. God is not afraid of that place. And yet God longs for us to come out of that and to breathe. And in that moment, we express the kind of freedom that God longs for all people to have. So when you see someone being baptized this way, you cannot help but consider the depths and the realities of drowning. Baptism brings us up out of that. And I was actually surprised this week. I was surprised as I researched this message and this time to learn about how significant drowning is in so many of our communities and in our families. There was a story last Sunday in the New York Times of a 15-year-old named Kenrick Sultan, and I think we have a picture of him in just a moment. He has started to learn how to swim. Ryan, could you put the picture of the young man up, please? The young man that you see there in the background, he started to learn to swim because not long ago when Hurricane Sandy came, the water got pushed up his street and he didn't know how to swim. People drowned because they did not know how to stay afloat. On average, each day, 10 people in the United States drown. So we need organizations like Swim Strong to turn the tides on those tragedies. And we might think, well, we're in Sacramento. It never rains in July. We'll be fine. We're in a floodplain, like the church is in a floodplain right now. Most of us live in a floodplain. Probably all of us at some moment are going to make our way out to the river. And so I want us to know something about drowning, both drowning literally and what it might mean in terms of our faith journeys metaphorically. Mario Vittoni wrote about this earlier this week in Slate. Here's the story he shared. There was a captain who was on a deck, fully dressed, and he looked out, he sprinted, he's a former lifeguard. He kept his eyes on this young person that was drowning. He's heading straight for this child that's drowning. And there's a couple right there in the way. They're like, "We're fine, we're fine." They're floating around. "What's he doing?" the guy says to the woman. He's annoyed. "This guy's like barreling at us." And she says, "We're fine." She yells back at him. He goes right through them and grabs the 9-year-old that's about 10 feet away from them, that's their daughter that's drowning. And she comes out of the water with tears, yelling, "Daddy," finally. And so how many folks are around us that are experiencing that? Neighbors and coworkers, maybe us ourselves. drowning in all kinds of things: debt, relational crisis, addiction, shame. But drowning rarely looks like what we think it looks like. So I want to invite us to know some things about drowning. First, there's very little splashing. There's no waving, one author in The Atlantic continues here. There's no yelling for help of any kind. It's the number two cause of accidental death in children under 15 in the United States. That was remarkable to me. And of the 750 children that'll die over the next year by drowning, about half, 375, will be less than 25 yards from a parent or another adult. And drowning doesn't look like what we think. This is an article in a Coast Guard magazine called On the Scene. So I want to share these five things and add some layers to them about what did the experience of someone who is drowning, what happens? First, except in rare circumstances, drowning people are physiologically unable to call for help. See, it turns out that the respiratory system is designed to help you respirate, not to talk. And so when you can't breathe, your body focuses on the breathing, not on allowing you to talk, and so the person can't yell. Drowning people's mouths, and this might be obvious to all of us, their mouths go up and down above and below the surface of the water. And as that happens, their mouth is above water for just a short period of time, and then they get sucked and pulled back down under. And there's not time to do anything other than to breathe. You can't yell out. And they have actually something called an instinctive drowning process. And what happens in that is that your arms start to try to keep you on the surface. And so when people think you're going to wave, your arms instinctively won't do that. Like physiologically, your body shuts down and makes you try to do this instead. It takes about 20 to 60 seconds before someone is submerged, unless they're rescued by a lifeguard or another professional or by an adult who's happening to notice. And what I've noticed in Eleanor this summer is there is a distinct difference when she has gone for that moment of trying to paddle out toward me, thinking I might get there, to the panic of I'm not going to get there. And you can see it in your child's eyes. They go from this, the parents are with me on this, to this look of utter panic. And so I want to invite us to consider what this might teach us, as the psalmist invited us to consider who are the orphans and the widows. And how have we left them aside? Thought I'd just get wet there as I do that. Jesus reminds us that we'll never swim freely until all can swim, no matter how dangerous the waters are. And Tim Suttle in a blog this week helped me to think about, first, they're not going to be able to tell you that it's happening very often. They're unable to call out for help. And so we're going to have to learn to notice the signs around them. One of those signs is that of ongoing, over and over self-sabotage. Like people who are drowning continue to do the same things that they've done, knowing that it's not going to get better, but that's the reflex, that's the only thing they have. They can't voluntarily control their arms. And so they get in a cycle. Some of us are social workers. We see this every day in our lives. And some of us are teachers, and we see this every day. And some of us live this because we're stuck in it. It's also true that below the water, that person has no power base. They may not have much time left as they're trying to stay afloat. And so what I wonder is who around you might be in that place. What would it be for you to notice? To notice that their hands might not be waving and their voice might not be loud, but they may be on the brink. One of the ways that we as a community have done just that is when Megan and Bailey went down to Mustard Seed School and asked about needs that they might have. And families who are unhoused right now and their children are in school at Mustard Seed are on the brink of drowning oftentimes. And so we came back, and a couple weeks ago, we invited you all to consider gifting a backpack. And this morning there were 31 backpacks back there. And so that's 31 moments of grace that a child who's going to get to school and is going to feel that moment of panic when the teacher says, you need to have these things, and the child knows that she's not going to have that. That's what drowning looks like in our schools. And teachers know it better than I do, that it's happening all the time. And so I don't think that those backpacks are going to teach those children how to swim. But maybe at moments, those floaties could allow them to breathe for a moment so that over time, they can have the folks accompanying them help them take them off, and they can learn to swim and be free. We're talking about noticing grace all summer, and sometimes it's hard to see, but I think that's a clear image of what grace looks like in the lives of these children. And the truth is, it's what grace looks like in the lives of many of us, just as the psalmist called, recognizing that orphans and widows are drowning among us. How are we going to swim to them and help? Who's going to be like that guy that jumped in with all of his clothes on? Like, not a care in the world other than that 9-year-old that's drowning. See, God arrives at that divine council and says to all of the other gods, we've neglected the widows and the orphans. This is not okay. But in order to address their needs, we're going to have to become strong swimmers ourselves. And I don't know where you are on that journey. Maybe you have floaties on. Maybe you're afraid of the water. Maybe you're ready to teach someone else how to swim. You've gone out to the depths and you know what it's like to be free in the water with God. And now maybe it's time for you to accompany somebody else. Harrison comes once a week to try to teach Eleanor. What's that going to look like for you? Who are you going to teach? Who are you going to come alongside so that they can learn to swim? And what's your swimming lesson going to look like? Here, ours looks like coming to worship on Sunday morning to root your life in grace, and then going into Blueprint to learn how to talk about this with other people, and then showing up every week to do it. Swimming is hard work. It takes over and over and over and over practice. God longs for us to come out of those troubled waters, to help notice the people around us whose eyes are wide open out of panic and fear, and they go alongside them, and together to learn to swim in the grace of God that longs for us to breathe. Amen.
Pass me not, O gentle Savior, hear my humble cry. While on others thou art calling, do not pass me by. Say,